All right, May, we're back. I see an article, the Washington merry-go-round, Viet Peace Plan. What's the Viet Peace Plan? This is by Jack Anderson. Well, yeah.
Jack Anderson had an article this week on President Nixon's foreign policy, and that the U.S. is going to play China against Russia. And that's quite obvious what we're going to do. We're not going to go too far into the China dealing, but we're getting Russia pretty angry about what's happening. And Jack Anderson said the Kremlin is almost neurotic in its suspicion that China is trying to cook up an anti-Soviet deal with the U.S. Well, I bring up that article because 2 weeks ago we started reading from a magazine called Sputnik, a Reader's Digest type of magazine from the Soviet Union. It's a monthly magazine, and the July issue and the August, September are carrying a series on the Dallas tragedy and the killing of John Kennedy. And for background, for those who didn't listen, for 7 years the Soviet Union has not touched the political assassinations in this country. And I always felt that this was the blackmail that they had over us, escalating in Vietnam or using atomic bombs, that they could overthrow the people running this country by disclosing the truth on the John Kennedy murders. And for 7 years they've kept quiet, although they did say enough. Like the first articles from Izvestia, a TASS agency, said Oswald was an agent of the CIA, and then they kept quiet. And so the Soviet Union held this over us for 7 years, and now they're coming out, publishing the details of the John Kennedy murder. And my reasoning or explanation was that if we get too friendly with China and play against Russia, who has not been an ally in any sense of the word, but we have recognized them more than China, they will continue to feed information and facts on the John Kennedy murder. That was my opinion of why it was coming out. And when I finished the article, the first article on Sputnik, and I'll be reading more, they mentioned, the author was asked, why are you bringing this out now? And he says, well, I think it's a good time. It's a kind of a blackmail. And they said, what are you saying? It's pure blackmail? And he said, well, yes, it is. And the author was at the nomination of John Kennedy in Los Angeles representing TASS, and he's followed this murder, John Kennedy, continuously in office and his murder. And now he feels that he wants to tell what happened. And we read 2 weeks ago a section of Sputnik because I want you to see what the people in the Soviet Union are learning about the United States now. And I left off reading the route, the decision of the route and the placing of Lee Oswald in the book Depository, who did it, their jobs and connections. So I'm going to go on, if some of you missed the background of up to the placement of the depository, I'm going to have to go forward and then get some these other tapes typed up for you. Sputnik says, in the final count, the riddle of Dallas would be more than half solved if the world could learn that the vice president's true motives when he insisted on his president traveling to Texas and particularly to Dallas. Accidents, including planned accidents, including accidents to presidents, do happen, and in the circumstances, it is not surprising, even America, that the Johnsons have been compared to the Macbeths. On the third or fourth day, I'm quoting Sputnik now, after the assassination in Dallas, President Johnson's brother was in San Antonio, and he called the president and said, I guess you're pretty busy, and the president said, yes, he'd just been in office a few days. And he thanked his brother for helping him with his campaigns and his work. And he said, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. And Lyndon's brother said, Lyndon, I had nothing to do with Oswald. This is in the book, My Brother Lyndon, by Sam Houston Johnson. And the Soviet Union said, printed the profanities that Johnson threw that I won't say over the air. And I've been pretty good, Gloria, about not using them on the station.
Yes, you have been.
Yeah, okay, I get a memo. Then it goes on to say the reaction, the really heavy reaction that Lyndon Johnson had. The Sputnik goes on, what a commission, oh Lord. It says, first, the same day following the assassination, Lyndon Johnson decided that the investigating commission would be in Texas. And the new president did not want one representative of the federal government investigating the murder. Second, he wanted to publish the FBI report on the crime without showing it even to the Attorney General, Robert Kennedy. Former aides of the assassinated president, it says, were sure not to see this material because they would have a definite aim in mind. Unfortunately, I could not report these sensational facts at the time. For one thing, by their very nature, they suggested that the new president had an odd desire to avoid a broad, full-scale investigation of the murder. I brought with me a copy of a letter from the National, I'm making a quote now, to say the National Archives documents that I've mentioned I'm receiving. I have a copy of a letter dated December the 8th from J. Edgar Hoover to Earl Warren. And President Kennedy was dead just a few weeks, 2 weeks. And this is the way the letter reads. J. Edgar Hoover mentions that Lyndon Johnson had called him and wants Earl Warren to take care of the conspiratory theories on the assassination. It says, Lyndon Johnson has asked me to call you, write to you, Earl Warren, and tell you that there are rumors. The Gallup poll says that 50% of the people at home and abroad don't believe there was no conspiracy. And your commission, you're going to have a commission now. See, it was out of the hands of the Texas officials, and Lyndon Johnson appointed a commission, and Earl Warren is the head of it. Your commission will do its work, but I want you, in the meantime, to lay to rest the fears and the anxieties and say, number one, that all the evidence, fingerprints and the rifle and photographic and documents, places Oswald as a lone assassin. And number two, that Ruby had no connection with any group or government in this country or outside or group of people, that there was no conspiracy. So the conclusion of the Warren Report, which is to come out in September 1964, was ordered by Lyndon Johnson to J. Edgar Hoover to Earl Warren the first week of December 1963 still. So all of the work or research wouldn't matter. Everything that's piled up since, it doesn't really matter. The order came out. Now, when Earl Warren didn't want the position to head the commission, Lyndon Johnson said to him, if I were chief commander and you were in the service, would you take my order? And he said, yes. He said, well, I order you to take this commission, which he did. Now, Sputnik goes into Johnson's abortive attempt to establish his Texas commission for hopes for uncovering the true reasons and the motives and the participants. John J. McCloy, who in the past carried out delicate foreign assignments for the government, had a confidential discussion with representatives of foreign states as they arrived for the funeral and bluntly demanded that the press in their country cease raising a fuss about the assassination and desist from the insinuations that there was a conspiracy. And McCloy threatened the United States relations with these countries would deteriorate drastically. I'm ending the quote now to say that the archives documents, which I'm getting of the commission meeting, say that when the Warren Report was finished, John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles, these men were to go to the heads of the press and governments in Europe, and they all made trips to Europe and promised them, don't you dare talk. The Warren Report is accurate. It's the last word. And it is in writing how they were to make the trips, who they were to talk to, what pressures they were to put. So when Sputnik comes out and says this role that McCloy had at the time of the funeral, I can't say it's not true because I have copies of the orders of the commission to put it down when it came out. And John J. McCloy's law firm in New York was a conduit for CIA operations, the biggest we have in this nation. In certain circles in America, they desired as little talk as possible about the conspiracy. The rest of the proceedings of the official investigation of the assassination showed it was directed by a hand accustomed to the cowboy tradition of breaking in a horse. On November the 29th, President Johnson set a special commission. After category refusals with Earl Warren, he agreed to take the case. I saw George McBundy. This is how Warren says it. I saw George McBundy first, and he took me in and said how serious the situation was, that there were wild rumors of an international situation. Dean Rusk talked to me. He mentioned the head of the Atomic Energy Commission, how millions of people would be killed in an atomic war if I didn't head this commission. The only way to dispel these rumors was to have an independent, responsible commission, and no one could head it but the highest judicial officer. And this is the quotation that he was given. You've been in uniform before, he said, and if I asked you, would you put on that uniform for your country? I said, of course. This is more important than that, he said. You're putting it like that, and I can't say no, Earl Warren said to our president. When you put it like that, I can't say no. Let us begin, I'm reading Sputnik, let us begin with Warren's initial refusal to take part in the commission. The Chief Justice explained his refusal that members of the Supreme Court shouldn't be asked outside of the framework of their court to direct these duties. But after all, he said, the country was rocked by the murder of its president, and before the eyes of America, the alleged assassin was killed, and the authorities in Dallas violated every principle of law. They utilized the mass media to convince the people of Oswald's guilt before any investigation was carried out. And it said the highest representative of the judiciary in the United States of America was pulled in then to back up the news media's reports. And within a few days after the commission was formed, Earl Warren made a sensational announcement about the facts and circumstances connected with the assassination of President Kennedy, and that they would never be known during the lifetime of the present generation. And today, when most of the conclusions represented in the report of the Warren Commission have been disproved and not accepted in America or anywhere else, Warren's statement is completely comprehensible. Now, Sputnik says the Dallas police announced that Oswald was a communist. And the same Johnson, who was the first and only member of the Kennedy cabinet to put forth the communist plot theory after the murder, a week later wanted to say it was a wild rumor that his commission would go into all this. But Earl Warren was caught in the hook of patriotism. And as far as I and the rest of the Soviet newsmen stationed in Washington were concerned nationally, we wondered how the communist conspiracy theory would hold up in the hands of the Warren Commission. Now, I'm going back now where this author says that the country was rocked with this murder, and the authorities in Dallas violated the law and utilized the mass media to convince us of Oswald's guilt before the investigation was carried out. And I want to show you how the news media affects your lives. We talked about today in New York in the prison where they say the hostages cut their throats in a bloody way, and now we find out that they were shot by our own people coming in armed. But I brought a book which I love to read, and I told you I'd give book titles each week. It's called 70 Hours and 30 Minutes, and it is an education. It is a broadcast from the NBC network, published by Random House. 70 Hours and 30 Minutes, it costs $2.95, and if you take what came over the news from Friday noon until Sunday evening and you analyze it, then you can say, what else can we believe, or how can we go into it? My favorite quotation from the news was Sunday evening. I'm going to read you some of the news that came through till Sunday night. But at the end of the evening, on Sunday night, the Dallas police declared the case closed. The public official, Henry Wade, said, our office has not closed the investigation. The Dallas police has said the case is closed. The district attorney hadn't yet closed it, he said, because there is no concrete evidence that Oswald killed this president, but there is no doubt in our minds that Oswald was the assassin. Now that is, our office has not closed it. The police have closed it. The district attorney hasn't closed it because there is no concrete evidence, but there's no doubt in our minds that he was the assassin. Now that's pretty heavy, because you're getting the same thing out of New York today. The 70 hours and 30 minutes, to show you what came into your heads. A lot of people have asked me, Gloria, how did you get into the research? How did you get started? What are your motives? What got you into this thing? And I want to say that, briefly, that some people hear news and they disbelieve it completely. Or they hear what a person says or what a doctor says, like you've got a lump on your breast. They don't hear them. They just go on. Some people don't hear anything that's said, and or they take a bum or a negative and distort. Some people hear something and they don't even know what they're hearing, and they push it away. And then there's a certain amount of people, for some reason or other, through education or perception, sensitivity, like we were saying before, who hear what they're hearing and want to know if what they hear is correct. So it's 7 years later, and you've heard a lot about conspiracies. So I want to read just a few things that came off the NBC News, because you sit every night and watch the news. And thinking back now, wouldn't you have been suspicious like I was? If you hear what came over the news, I want to read you. At 1:45, they announced that President Kennedy was shot. I'm taking parts of this book, The Hour. This was on Friday. At 2:15, a young man was taken in custody protesting his innocence. At 2:45, NBC said a shot came from the right and rear and struck the president's head. At 3:13, the weapon was found. It was a British 303 rifle with a telescopic sight. And the Secret Service the agent also had been killed. It said at 3:15 a Secret Service agent was killed and a Dallas policeman. Now at 3:15 a German Mauser was found and three bullets were used. So the British 303 became a German Mauser. Later, 24 hours later, it's to be in Washington. It's going to be an Italian Carcano, and it's going to have printed on the bottom of it, made in Italy. And it's going to weigh differently than these things, but in the building were these other guns. Now, I have to keep breaking from this and end the quote there and just intersperse another thing. In the information I have coming from the National Archives on this evidence, there was so much evidence coming in of different guns, and Roy Truly was asked, and this is verified, to fingerprint the people in his building that worked there, and he refused to do it. He said they would leave and we'd close down the building. They wouldn't fingerprint his employees to see if any fingerprints were on any of these guns or what windows they were in. Roy Truly absolutely forbid the commission to fingerprint the employees in the depository. So you're told that 313 is British 303. At 3:15, that's a 2:45. At 3:15, you get a German Mauser. At 3:56, Lyndon Baines Johnson took the oath of office sworn in by District Judge Sarah Hughes. End quote here, in Dallas, Texas. In 1967, February the 18th, it was disclosed that a charitable foundation intimately associated with the Republic National Bank and major companies served as a channel for at least over $500,000 in CIA funds since 1958, and one of the foundation's trustees is Federal Judge Sarah T. Hughes, who administered the oath of office to President Johnson following the assassination of John Kennedy. Now back to our 70 hours and 30 minutes. At 5:36, Oswald was seen to be the prime suspect, according to the newsman. Remember, later we have no other suspect at all, but he's the prime. At 5:44, all circumstantial evidence points to the guilt of Lee Oswald. But now it seems it was not a right-wing, it was a left-wing pro-communist plot. This is at 5 in the afternoon. He's saying he's innocent. It's pro-communist. At 8:25 in the evening, the prime suspect is still saying he is innocent, he didn't do it. At 9 o'clock, Oswald insists he had nothing to do with it. Now at 9:48, Friday evening, information is coming in on Oswald. The news said this: Oswald was arrested in New Orleans for handing out literature on fair play for Cuba. He said he was a Marxist. He was married in Russia. He was in the building where the shots that killed Kennedy were fired. Now, if you analyze those things, and when they're asked why they closed the case, they listed that he was in New Orleans with communist literature, that he was a Marxist, he married a Russian, and that he was in the building where the shots were fired. When you do your research, or when you think of a crime, you think of a weapon, weapon ownership, fingerprints, bullet direction, how many bullets in the car, other people that saw gunmen leave the grassy knoll. You go with the ballistics. You don't go with these things, because when you do 7 years research, it turned out the fair play for Cuba didn't exist there. He was the only man there, and it was a front for his CIA activity. He was married in Russia. He was brought over by our State Department and Senator John Tower. He wrote to Tower for permission to come back. Tower is so far right, he makes a Tower piece that just, you know, look like staying straight up. I mean, Senator Tower is a very arch conservative. Why would Oswald write to him when he hates America so much? All of Oswald's links were with the right wing and John Connally in the State Department. So being married in Russia has nothing to do with any of this. None of the things that they reasoned for his being the killer have anything to do with the actual crime. At 10:11 p.m., they said that Oswald was given $437 by our own State Department to be returned from Moscow. And late in the evening, after midnight, Oswald said, "I didn't shoot anybody." Saturday morning, John McCone, head of the CIA, was conferring with President Johnson in the White House at 10:06. At 10:11 Saturday morning, the Dallas police are convinced that Lee Oswald is guilty, but they have no confession or admission of his guilt. 10:54, on the news, NBC News, the fingerprints on the rifle were only partial and cannot be identified as Oswald's. They were airlifted to Washington. Mr. Latona, who's worked with the FBI for 35 years, powdered them, photographed them, examined them, did every ballistic test, and said there are no fingerprints of Lee Oswald on this Italian Carcano, and the news is telling you that he's guilty because he married in Russia. But they're telling you on NBC News, you listened that day, and it's in writing here, you can read it, but this is what I was hearing, that the fingerprints cannot be identified as Oswald. At 12:43, Jesse Curry, chief of police, said Oswald brought a large package to work with him. and he was on the sixth floor around noon. Now, that's a big deal. You know, he brought something with him. They said at 1 o'clock, paraffin test proved he fired the rifle. That later was thrown out. At 2 o'clock on Saturday, the Dallas police said there is sufficient evidence to convict Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, this is what the Soviet Union is saying, the news media controlled this country and gave you a pat answer. And I'm reading NBC News. I'm not reading the offbeat stations, the ones that are subsidized by the anti-war people. I mean the establishment. NBC News coming out of Dallas and Washington with McGee and your top reporters. And they're telling you, they're saying at 2 o'clock on Saturday there was sufficient evidence to convict Oswald. At 3:16, the people who knew Oswald came in, and this is nice research on the Dallas people. People who knew Oswald said he was a bookish introvert, a loner. Well, if you're an agent, you're a loner anyway. It has nothing to do with his being alone. He saw people, and we know the apartments they met and the banks he went to and what transacted. Being alone doesn't mean you murdered John Kennedy. And this is the way the American people were brainwashed. At 3:15, in the Saturday, he said he was on inactive reserve with a dishonorable discharge. That has been thrown out. He went out of the Marines with an honorable discharge. It goes on, he traveled to Russia, affirmed his allegiance to the Soviet Union, and wrote to Senator Tower of Texas asking help to return. We've gone into that. Saturday, they said photographs have been shown of Oswald holding the rifle. They were found in the garage the day of the assassination. The Dallas police came in, and with the help of Mrs. Payne and Marina Oswald, they took boxes out, put them in the car, and took them away. No inventory, no list in front of any person. They returned them Saturday morning, and Mrs. Payne left her house. Her husband left the house, and no one was home. And the FBI goes through the box and say, oh, here's a negative, Oswald holding a rifle. And that's how they were found. Now, Sunday morning, the Dallas police declared at 10:38, the Dallas police declared the case, the Oswald case, closed. And this is Sunday morning at 10:38. The case was completely closed. Sunday evening, the Dallas police force declared the Oswald case was closed officially. Henry Wade, district attorney, made a public statement. When he was asked the evidence upon which he closed his case, he said, a number of witnesses saw someone with a gun in the window. Number two, the gun used to murder the president was purchased from a mail order house in Chicago. Number three, an assumed name ordered the gun, the same name that Oswald used. Number D, the fourth thing was witnesses saw him stop and reload a gun and enter a theater. The next reason was his fingerprints were found on a rifle, which was absolutely not true. At 10:39 Sunday evening, the Dallas District Attorney's office knew that there were no fingerprints, and they're telling the people in America they saw them. And the next reason was a paraffin test showed he fired a rifle recently, and this was thrown out. So he said, our office, this is the quotation I had before, our office has not closed the investigation as there is no concrete evidence, but there is no doubt in our mind that Oswald was the assassin. Well, I was sitting home listening to the same news that you were and everybody else was. And I know that someone saying a man in a window had a gun, it could even be a Secret Service man guarding the motorcade, that he purchased it from a mail order house while Oswald was alive. They said, did you order this gun from Klein's? He said, I had no gun. If it came, it came in my wife's name. I never owned a gun. The gun had no fingerprint when he sang, and there was a whole chain of where this rifle came from later. The fact that he used an assumed name when the commission met, and Gerald Ford, arch conservative and a respectable member of Congress, writes a book on the assassination of John Kennedy and tells how the commission met and the Dallas officials came in with evidence that Oswald was an agent of the FBI and gave his number and his aliases and his box number. Alias names were used. As agents, you have many names, you have multiple names. The fact that he has an alias, Alec Heidel, in his wallet, doesn't mean that somebody that doesn't want to frame him didn't order the gun with that alias, knowing that he's that's his agent name. And then witnesses saw him stop and reload the gun entering a theater. That has nothing to do with the Tippit autopsy, the Tippit evidence of where he was, who he knew, how he was placed in the Oak Cliff section, who saw a getaway car with two people get in there, saw Oswald leaning on the window talking to Tippit in a friendly manner. The fact that he reloaded a gun, if he's an agent of any kind, he left his money at home, he left a letter at home and all this, but if he had a role as a decoy, it doesn't matter. Sure, he may have a gun for defense because they may think, you know, like you're a suspect. He may have a gun, and they take it from him. The gun didn't match up the bullets to Tippit's body, so it doesn't matter what he reloaded or loaded. So when the Soviet Union talks about the news media keeping the truth from the American people, you may say, I don't trust the Soviet Union, but my research is saying that they're not accepting the blackmail. We're going to go with China now and turn our back on you. I think the Soviet Union will remind the officials of this government and help find out who usurped this power if we get too involved in turning against them. I feel that it's a power play, like I've said before, and that they're going to watch the people in Washington. I think the Soviet Union fears 72 as much as I do.
Do you want to wrap it up now? Maybe we have about 4 minutes left. Or do you want to outline what we're going to do next week?
No, well, you know, I say, well, I'll do a certain thing, and then I have so much material. I typed out this week about 10 different subjects that if nothing really important comes in the news, we could do 1 hour on each of those subjects. But these things like the New York and the using, I have said, and I've said it from the first show, that you're going to see a lot of confrontation and killing of the leaders, of the black leaders and white leaders, and 72 is going to be unlivable. And I just wish people would begin to think of this as either we're going to wake up and use a form of action. I will speak to you and try to tell you that if you care, you have to get involved. You can't say, I really like organic food and I don't like sprayed food and I want my garden, but there's this TV special on tonight, or did you meet the press, or did you this or that? If you want to grow vegetables, you find out what kind of seeds and manure, and you do the best you can. If you want to find out who's running your government, you're going to have to get the books and read it and subscribe to a paper and care. You know, you can't call me or take up my time and say, did you see this or that? And I say, well, did you read the Herald last night? Even the innocent little Herald, and they don't even see it. I think that you people have to decide if I am giving you information, if you're going to use it as a political tool and not just a hobby, to say, well, I'm listening to Mae Brussel. If you're not going to use it as a political tool, I'm not going to stop working for you. I'll just grow tomatoes. So I think you have to decide if you're going to take some of this seriously, even one fraction of it, and try to effect a change. And if you don't know how to start or where to start, just keep writing public officials. Write to those candidates or people and say, this is important, or Representative Talcott, you are 1 mile from Mae Brussels. Why is housing in the Soviet Union more important to the Republican Party? I would like the same people that invited Bert Talcott to talk about Russia to invite me to talk to the Republican Party on why their party would be affected by the changes, or the League of Women Voters. I'll go to them and talk to their group and tell them why this should be on the ballots and not ignored, that these things are the primary things and not the last things to be discussed. In election year, they're talking about all the priorities, and this is the only issue now is, first of all, will you have an election, and who took the power, and how can you remove them? I don't want hangings or death penalties, but I do think the people involved in these assassinations should maybe put in one train like a circus and parade it around the country and then let everyone see them, because they're normal people like your neighbors or you or me. You can't separate who's doing these things. And I think you should just see who is planning the overthrow of the government, like the people that killed the 400 leaders in Germany before Hitler came in. I think they have identifications, and we should just really see what people are trying to do to us. I don't know if it's possible.
Then you want people to continue to write.
I want them to write.
Officials.
I want them to scream and yell, and I'll go talk to them, and on a reasonable, non-emotional basis, try to explain why the political assassinations are the only issue of 1972. It's either that or a police state.
Thank you, Mae.